Hello, welcome to the Rhizome podcast. My name is Toriseju Omagbemi, and I am your host for today. Today, we discuss moving beyond generational differences, creating a meaning and engagement for all. I'm excited to have you with me today, and I'm also excited to have with me Mr. Bayo Akindende. I hope I got that right.
You did. It's Akindende. Yeah.
Akindende.
It's fantastic.
Akindende.
That's it. You got it.
Fantastic. That's fantastic. So Mr. Bayo Akindende is a leading private sector development expert with over 22 years experience. He has been at the forefront of numerous private sector development programs in Africa, Central and Eastern Europe, and as well as the UK. And interestingly, putting a context to our discussion today, Mr. Bayo is off the baby boomer generation. And oops, I am off the millennial generation. Fantastic to have you with us on the Rhizome podcast today, Mr. Bayo.
Good, good. Thank you very much.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Great, great. So we'll start the conversation. So this is particularly interesting for me, you know, because I started my career some 6 years ago, and I've had to work with relatively a mixed generation. And, you know, the narrative currently in the workspace is how complex and, you know, how the workplace is accommodating Generation Z, looking at those who were born between 1997 to, you know, 2012, they're about millennials from 1981 down to 1996, Generation X, baby boomers, all of this generation, you can see them, you know, under one roof, trying to meet one goal, And it's essential that the workspace provide that enabling environment to maximize bringing all of this generation, these different age groups together so that everyone can find a meaning, right? So the conversation today is going to help us explore what this is all about. Is even worth talking about, you know, should we spend our time discussing this? Is this important for management to look at the different spectrum of generation that apply in their workspace and how to ensure that there is an enabling environment for better communication, for effective communication, and for collaboration, you know, between this different generation. So my first question in that light to you, Mr. Bayo, is why is it important to understand generational differences?
Okay, thanks very much, Toriseju. I think the first thing is, as you said, actually, it's quite interesting. I belong to the baby boomer generation, that's 47 to 64. And there's one generation in between, the generation X, and then you come in, as you say, you're millennial, right?
Yes.
Yes, okay. So if you like, there's two generations in between us.
Mm-hmm.
Now that in itself is quite interesting. So having this conversation between somebody who is millennial and somebody who's a baby boomer in itself says a lot. But we'll come to that much later.
Mm-hmm.
So your question is, how do the generations work in the workplace? I think the first thing to understand is that with each generation come a different set of values and interests. And I'll keep going back to the issue of values and interests. So each generation comes with its own set of values and interests, with its own norms. And then you have other things that sort of interlay on this set of issues. So it's not quite as simple. I don't want to make it sound complex. It's not that complex, but it's not just one thing. It's a number of things that are interwoven and give us this thing that we're discussing, the sort of issue of generations within the workforce.
Fantastic, fantastic. Norms, interests. I remember when I was interning, you know, with a firm that played in the development space, I was interested in a lot of things that my manager wasn't interested in, right? Because he was of a different generation. And I noticed how he specifically and strategically found a way to peep into my interest and And that helped our conversations, you know, when we get into a quick chat or when we get into formal conversations. He found a way to relate better with me by just, you know, diving a bit into some of my interests. Obviously, they weren't his interests, but I guess that, you know, for effective communication's sake, he did that. So on that light, how do you personally, Mr. Bayo, you know, find navigating relationships of different generations in the workspace?
Okay. Thanks. I think the first way to answer that question, I think we need to understand what the four key challenges are when you have a workforce comprising different generations. First of all, you need to understand the company culture, the culture of the environment in which you're working in. That is one issue. The second is the style of communication. First of all, meetings, email, how else do you communicate? Then you have the issue of negative stereotypes. So you'll get someone like me saying, all these youngsters and their issues. And you get someone younger saying, all these old people, all these babas and mamas, you know, what are they doing in the workplace? You don't understand how we do things.
Absolutely.
Then you have a fourth key challenge, which is the cultural expectation. So the simplest form is how you address people in terms of culture. So in an office, you could find yourself as a young person having an older person reporting to you. How do you manage that? How do you address your subordinate who's older than you, for example? Or vice versa, you have somebody who's older, dealing with a lot of young people. How do you address them in meetings? Then, to when I say cultural expectations, then bring in a different setting. When you have a mix, especially in development, where you have Europeans, Asians, and Africans all working together, and you have a meeting, and as you're calling me Mr. Bayo, in the meeting, you won't call me Mr. Bayo, you'll say Bayo. Now, I could take offense and say, how dare you?
Yeah.
I'm 30 years older than you are. How could you address me as Bayo? Whereas our European colleagues in the room would look at me and say, what's the problem? That's your name, isn't it? So the point I'm making is that you have lots of challenges in terms of generations in the workplace. The issue now, as you've said, is how do you then get across each of these challenges? I'll just go through them again. The company culture, the style of communication, the negative stereotypes on both sides, and then the cultural expectations. Now, add all this together and you start to see that you have a mix that makes it quite challenging in terms of navigating through all of this.
Absolutely.
When you start to work with a multi-generational workforce.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you so much. My next question, you've touched on it a bit. You know, I was going to ask, you know, is it necessary to understand cultural norms? Because culture is what defines every organization. Is it necessary now to now understand cultural norms to have effective relationship across generations?
Absolutely. Now, a lot of us, because we adhere, if you like, to the Western style of working, irrespective of where you are, that's the style we all use, the Western style of communication and the Western style of working. That also then means that to a certain extent, we subscribe to Western culture. That's fine.
Absolutely.
The problem then is when you, for example, you and I, both of African origin, then try to work together, and then you try to use those Western norms, and I may reject it and say, you know, I don't want that, right? And you may also look at me and think, ah, well, that's the way we're supposed to work. What's the problem, right? So if there's the issue of, first of all, working across cultures and working within one culture, but using the norms from another culture. So you're beginning to see the issues here.
Yeah.
So now, going back to your key question, what is the issue with culture? Cultural expectations. First of all, name calling. I mentioned that earlier.
Yeah.
You do not. If you're born, bred, and raised in an African country or in Nigeria, you do not call an older person by name.
Absolutely.
End of.
Absolutely.
Irrespective. You call them Mr., you call them Oga, you call them whatever you do, you don't address them. Then you have the issue. I often joke when I was a kid, when you try and address somebody, you can't say you said. Ah, how dare you? The word you is normal. So what do we do? Because in our local languages, for adults, you have they.
Yeah.
You have they said. Now, if you transliterate that into English, you cannot say in the meeting, when you're looking at me, they said, somebody will say, well, there's no they. You're talking to buyer. What do you mean they said? So you already have a problem there. So first of all, what do you call me? Right? Then how do you address me? Then how do you talk to me? And how do you say, look, you know, buyer, the point you're making is rubbish. You're actually talking nonsense. You can't say that. Whereas if you were speaking to somebody from a different culture, using a worse environment, you could say, look, I don't agree with your point. It doesn't make sense. But you can't say that to somebody older, can you?
Wow.
So the point is, so you have all these issues of culture, all these issues all mixed together, and it's quite a potent mix. The question is, how do we navigate it? And how do we make sure we get the job done? Because at the end of the day, we shouldn't forget, workforce, what are we there for? To get a job done, to get results,
absolutely,
to implement, to get a set of deliverables. If you're not doing that, then why aren't you doing it? Yes, then you have issues of culture. For example, as you've said, that could be an impediment to getting things done because we're not able to navigate through these expectations.
Fantastic. So I can relate to that so well. My experience, when I started my career early, I worked in the oil and gas downstream. So the culture there was, when my boss steps in, we say, "Oga, welcome, sir. Welcome, sir." Mm-hmm. You know, you don't dare call him by his name. And I moved into the development sector. And for the first 1 week, I saw everyone address everyone by their names. And it was difficult for me to comprehend. I was like, oh, that's the regional manager. Why call him by his name? That's the boss. That's the Oga. And you know, I was with my friends, and my manager called me, and you know, I called him by his first name. Hi. His name, and I got off the conversation. I told my friend, "Oh, that's my manager." And they were like, "You don't mean it, and you're calling him by his name?" So you see, the culture, right? And you're spot on. Thank you so much for that point. So let's talk motivation, right? Mm-hmm. Because our interests, just as you've mentioned, differ. Just based on the fact that we are from different generation. So how do you motivate employees from different generation? Because I'm thinking that what you need to motivate an employee from Generation Z or a millennial from Generation X or from a baby boomer generation would differ, because our interests, our likes differ. So how do you motivate employees from different generation? Do you use a one-size-fits-all approach? Do you tailor? How do you do this, Mr. Pai?
Yes. I think you already started to answer the question.
Actually.
You tailor. It's okay. It's okay. It's just conversation. You adapt. So let me take two extremes. My generation, baby boomers, and yours, the millennials, right? So what are we looking at? What are my values and interests? At my age now, my kids are all grown up. I'm looking towards pension. I'm looking towards settling and, you know, sort of enjoying life later in life. You're just starting out. You want money. You're not even thinking of buying a house yet. You're not thinking of getting married yet. Or maybe you're thinking of getting married. So your values and interests differ if we look at it on a serious level. So for starters, this is where good HR comes in, to understand that my set of values and interests are not the same as yours. And it's not, you can't try and align it. What you have to understand is we differ. Now let's put into less serious matters. Issues, for example, office design. Some older people are used to having an individual office, right? Where it's compartmentalized.
Yes.
Younger people prefer open plan, where you can sit in the open plan room, you work away, you can hot desk, you can move from one. There's no, this is my space. Some of the older people like to have an office with a door, with folders, with shelves, in tray, out tray. Young people don't need in tray, out tray. Just have a laptop, put it on the desk, have a laptop, open it up, work away, go and have a coffee, come back, chat. Older people want a different setting. That's another one, right? Then working hours as well. Some people, younger people prefer flexible working hours, generally, I'm generalizing, the older ones may have set ways of doing things. So they want to know, yes, it's 9 to 5 with a bit of overtime. We understand that. Whereas young people may tell you, I don't feel like coming in this morning. I want to work from home today. Or I'll come in, I'll work through my lunch hour, keep the office open, I can work till 11 or 10 at night, and then I'll go to a bar with my friends. That's how they want to work. Now, it's no good saying, well, no, the office is open from this time to, no. So you have to be flexible in how you structure the work environment to suit these different generations and what their requirements are. So first of all, you need to understand the requirements, and then you need to adapt the workplace and the environment to suit. And then in terms of relaxation as well, a typical one, for example, is Christmas parties at Christmas time. The younger ones want to do something completely different. The older ones want to go to a boring restaurant, sit down, eat, and then carry on from there. Younger people don't want to do that. Not because it's not nice, but they don't want to do that. You can't force them. So I'm just giving you examples of where there are issues and differences in what the generations want. Therefore, it's up to the workplace management to understand that and to adapt it such that you don't try and align it, but you try and make sure you come up with something that meets both sets of values and interests and keep everyone happy. So you get the best out of them. Because again, that's what matters. That's why we're in the workplace.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Mr. Bayo. So we have been looking at this from the perspective of aligning organizational settings, culture, and to expectations and interest of various generations that makes up the workplace. But do you think that this is an opportunity for growth, for productivity, for organizations? How can organizations, leverage on generational diversity in its workforce for better performance?
Good question. I think there's benefits from both sides. And again, I like to use very simple, basic examples. For this chat we're having, for this conversation we're having, yes. I'm in Zambia. Yes. You're in Nigeria.
Yes.
And we're recording this online. Mm-hmm. Now, 2 years ago, I'd never used Zoom. Mm-hmm. I'd never used most of the devices you asked me to download, to use this, Audacity, all these things. Never heard of it. Yeah. But I'm having to learn. Right?
Yeah.
You, on the other hand, you feel very au fait, very conversant with it. To you, it's normal. That's how you do things. So for starters, what we have already is a mix. I'm having to adapt to come up to scratch and understand what is being used now. And you're having to sort of say, look, this is how we do it. Now, let's reverse it the other way around as well. There are lots of issues you will face in the workplace that you don't have the experience to deal with. Well, I've worked in different environments with different people, therefore I bring something also to the table. So to answer your question, a multi-generational workforce, a diverse workforce in terms of generations is good, because what you bring together then is a combination of experience, a combination of hands-on, a combination of working at the coalface, as it were. And then when you bring that together, you have a rich environment in which the end beneficiary of whatever job you're doing benefit more, because they have experience and knowledge from different. So you're combining experience and knowledge from different generations, and therefore the diversity and the richness of the diversity is beneficial.
Wow, fantastic. So combining experience and knowledge, for better business performance, basically.
Absolutely.
It's leveraging diversity, of the workspace or the workforce. Fantastic. Thank you, Mr. Bayo. Thank you so much. So
you're welcome.
I'll move to the next question. We'll have a couple and we'll be signing out on this one. So
it's okay.
How can organizations, create an enabling environment for its workforce to thrive, bearing in mind that different things motivate people of various generations?
Yes, I think this is where human resource organizations come into their own. because it's their specialty. If I set up a business, for example, to make cakes or to make cups or to make laptops, I'm not an expert in human relations. I'm not an expert in human resources. I have no idea. Now, when you then require to work with people from different generations, right? Mm-hmm. This is where you bring in specialist experts who know how to mix, how to understand the different requirements, how to understand the different values of interest, how to come up with communication styles, and how to help you develop a company culture. That's how you start to come up with an environment that is enabling and is conducive to different generations working together. So to answer your question in simple terms, yes, you can create an enabling environment. But this is where, as I say, the company culture needs to understand, what is the company culture? How do you want the company to be seen? How do you want it to be reflected in what you do? Who's the face of the business? Or who are the faces of the business? What kind of business is it? All these are factors that would determine the way you structure, you have the way the company culture is formulated, and the way it's, how can I put it? The way it's implemented is not the word. The way it's put out, yeah, right? That would determine that. And all these factors, right, then determine the extent to which the environment is conducive to different generations working together.
Fantastic. Let's talk a bit of politics, if I may. Picking leadership, selecting leaders, appointing leaders.
Yes.
What should be the leading driver for organizations, you know, when selecting a leader? Age, capacity, or experience? What do you think is the value?
Wow. For an organization, first of all, is to turn it the other way and say, who are your clients? Or who are your users? Or who are your consumers? And what is it they're looking for in the product or the service? That, to a certain extent, then determines how you project the business or the company to those people who use or consume your products or services, right?
Absolutely.
So if you're going to come up with a service that is targeted, for example, at men, then of course you choose the fit of the business carefully. Vice versa, if you're looking at something for young people, then you can't put somebody with gray hairs on the cover, because for starters, puts them off. I'm talking of visuals for starters,
yes.
Simplest things. Now let's move into another one is music, for example. If you're looking at young people's music, you can't put me on the cover. It's like, who's this old man? So it doesn't make sense, okay? So how do you choose leaders? It has to be a combination of all the above, as it were. Age, of course, somebody who's you think can do the job. Capacity, I ability to deliver, and it depends on what it is. For some, you require technical skills. For some, you just require a project manager who can bring together the technical experts, the implementers, the administrators, the support staff, all of these people together. It just depends on the business. It's like running a country. There is no set piece or sets, not set piece. There is no set gender or set age for running a country. It's a combination of all of those things, which is age of the person, the experience they have, the political leanings, the values and interests, all these factors come together. So it's not as simple as, oh, this is the prototype. It depends on how you combine those things and how it's reflected in that person or persons.
Fantastic. Thank you so much again, Mr. Bayo. So,
okay.
Structurally or culturally, I know we've spoken about structure, you spoke more about culture, to be honest, but we're looking at this from this perspective now. Structurally or culturally, how should organizations develop a workforce that embraces generational differences?
Wow. I'm not going to pretend to be an expert in this area, but I think the way to go, would be to get people who understand how to do this, how to get this mix, people who understand how to work towards a company culture that allows for everyone to thrive, both young and old, from different generations, different genders. I forgot to mention also from different backgrounds, because we keep talking about generations. You also have people from different generations, but also from different backgrounds. That's another interesting point, because we all have to get together in the workforce to deliver. So how does the company do this? Like I said, I'm not an expert in this. It's a tough one, but it requires expertise to do it. And because you're trying to get the issue of diversity, diversity of generations, and harness the rich scene of values, skills, interests, norms into producing something. Yes. Yeah.
Fantastic. So from a perspective of continuity, sustainability, if I may, how do organizations manage its diverse generations, knowing that the younger generation fits better into a continuity plan? There's an assumption there, but I made this assumption, you know. I'm thinking, obviously, you just told me about how most of what interests you right now, you're looking at how you sign out, your pension. All of those are what makes a meaning to you at the moment, right? And for any organization who's thinking to stay competitive in the next 50, 60, 70 years, they must be putting their money on the younger generation, you know? Yeah. So from a perspective, like I said, of continuity, how do organizations now manage its diverse generation, knowing that the younger generation fits better into a continuity plan? Does this information in itself, in the mind of leadership, of organization, of decision makers, affect how they relate, you know, to the workforce from an older generation as compared to the workforce from a younger generation?
Wow. It's a complex one. You said 50, 60, 70 years. I would say that's even too far. I would start by saying 25 years, because we don't even know which way, for example, artificial intelligence has taken us. We now have the new expression, emotional artificial intelligence. So AI is developing very fast. To what extent is that going to control how we work? And I'm not just sort of trying to make it complex, but that's an interesting factor. To what extent will that change the nature of the workforce of the future? Forget about 50 years. We're talking 5, 10, 15, max 25 years. What's the impact going to be? How do you project forward? Now, to answer your question, I just thought I'd put that out there. Mm-hmm. To answer your question, how do you then plan? Well, again, I go back to what I said earlier, but elaborate more. You take a bit of both. You understand what the current generation wants, but remember, there's another generation coming after. Are they going to be the new workforce? What do they want to see? And then the baby boomers will be phasing out. So if you like, baby boomers are starting to retire now, aren't they? Because most of them have hit 30 to 35 years in civil service, in private sector. So they're beginning to phase out now. So they're out of the equation, not fully out of the equation, but they're slowly getting out of the equation. Because we now have what I describe as a bulge, right? So you have the millennials, you have X generation, right?
Yes.
You have the Z generation, and then you have the one coming after. So these will have different values also and different requirements. So it's not, I don't want to make it sound too complicated, but it's a question of constantly adapting, constantly evolving, as a business does anyway, because the nature of work is also going to change. The nature of interaction is going to change. I mean, with the current pandemic that we have, how can the pandemic be current? Anyway, with the pandemic that we have, the nature of work has already changed. People are already talking about half designing workspaces so that you don't need all the employees to come in at once. So it's 50-50, work from home, work from the office. So residential places are changing, offices are changing. You don't need as much workspace, but you need workspace at home now. that itself also changes interaction between human beings. So the workforce as we know it is where we all come together to work, right? What if the future is that we don't all come together, we really come together virtually?
Yeah.
That has its own issues as well. So it is, the point I'm making, Tori Shejo, is that it is quite complicated. It is very, it's constantly changing. The issue is to what extent can employers and organizations adapt themselves to these constant changes, some of which are sudden changes dictated by certain events. The current one we have is the pandemic. Mm. So the pandemic has completely shifted the way we look at work and the way we understand work. Then, as I said to you, we have artificial intelligence. That's going to make a big change as well. And who knows what's going to happen in the future with transportation systems, for example. I don't know. But you could see another shift again.
Yep.
That would impact the way we interact as individuals, and therefore what we define as the workplace, which may not be a workplace as we know it now, but a different kind of workplace and different kind of work environment.
Wow. Thank you so much, Mr. Bayo Akindende. It's been a wonderful experience having this chat with you. And just as we started, this is someone who's from the millennials, having to host, be the host, you know, of a podcast, and having a guest with someone who's from the baby boomer generation. And it has been a fantastic conversation. I enjoyed it, and I hope you did. Those of us listening, I hope you enjoyed it as well. It's been fantastic for organization leadership, for organizations. It is important for us to create an enabling environment, taking into consideration cultural norms, experiences, interests of different generations, baby boomers generation, X millennials generation, Z, and the coming generation who's going to be getting into the workspace soon, projected to be generation alpha from, I guess, 2010 to about 2015, that range, those born within that, that year range, you know, it's important for us to create the environment so that diversity becomes our strength. Diversity becomes what we use, you know, in driving productivity and constant market grounds. Thank you so much once again, Mr. Bayo, for joining us on the Rise On podcast to discuss this very interesting topic. And thank you, listeners, for listening to the Rise On podcast. We're always here for you. We hope to catch you soon. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for the opportunity.
My pleasure.
Thank you.